This episode is brought to you today by me. That's right, I'm sponsoring my own podcast. The fact of the matter is that this is a labor of love for me. I love building interesting, insightful, and entertaining content for all of you, and I have different mediums that I want to make sure you know about. My Friday Fire newsletter comes out every Friday morning. It'll hit your inbox early a.m., and it's designed to inspire and motivate you and give you some things to enjoy listening to, reading, or watching over the weekend. It includes a meaningful quote, a short blog by me, lessons learned through my experiences in life and entrepreneurship, and then links to content that I've really enjoyed or that have had a big impact on my life. I put a link in the show notes, so signing up will take you less than 5 seconds, and you can unsubscribe at any time. I would also like to recommend my Light Your Fire podcast. This podcast has episodes uploaded daily that are only 10 to 15 minutes. They're designed to light a fire in your soul. Lots of motivation and mindset content with wide-ranging topics, and I always include parts of my journey and why the topic is so relevant to me. Topics range from the fear of regret to self-actualization to your support team in life to my 50-mile ultra run and my Ironman experience. There is a ton of content packed into short, bite-sized episodes for you to enjoy on the go when you have a little bit of time. They are also perfect for those short walks or jogs that I'm always recommending you do. Light Your Fire can be found on Apple and Spotify podcast platforms, and links are in the show notes. Thanks. Hey everyone, Chad here, and welcome to the Chad Shipley Show, where I bring you interesting, insightful, and entertaining content or people. Today's guest is my friend, Lainey Resitar. Lainey and I have been friends since the sixth grade, and if you'd have asked either of us back then if we'd be sitting around in 30 years having a conversation, we'd have probably both said no. And if you would have asked us if we'd be having a conversation about our experiences in Ironman triathlon races, we would have both said no way in hell. But that's what I love about life. That's what I love about this show. The ability to sit down with friends, old and new, and talk about the amazing shit they're doing in life. And just getting to hear all about them killing it. Lainey and I have stayed in touch over the years, and we've supported each other in both of our grand adventures. We haven't had a lot of opportunity to get together, but we've been at the same events, been in the same races, and we've really tried to continue supporting each other from afar. There have been a handful of times when I felt like no one really gave a shit about anything I was doing or trying to do, and I'd get a note from Lainey that would just be full of inspiration. So I wanted to take a minute and say, for that, Lainey, I am forever thankful. Lainey took on Ironman Florida 70.3 a couple months back, which was awesome. And I asked if she'd come on to the show to talk all about it. I thought it'd be fun to talk about all of the things that you don't really have any idea about until you're actually in an Ironman race. And this conversation exceeded my expectations on all fronts. It's funny, it's insightful, it's entertaining. And it will hopefully make you, for maybe even a split second, question what you are truly capable of doing. To you, Lainey, it was a blast. You're a beast, and I will always be a fan. Without further ado, I give you this fun and highly motivating conversation with my good friend, Lainey Resitar. Lainey, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chad. What's up?
This is going to be so much fun.
It is.
Yeah, I'm excited to do this. All right, let's set the context. So you and I, we were just talking about this. We've been friends for 30 years around that. I think middle school, right?
Yeah, I was just telling somebody about this today that I used to ride on your pegs on the bike to Hanky Farms Pool.
I remember that now.
We did. But yeah. I mean, yeah.
Down Steubenville Pike.
It was to the Hanky Farms Bowl, and then we play in the corner, and you know,
corner tag.
Yeah, whale or what was that game?
Yeah, where you have to jump over the people that are like waving their hands.
Right, whale. Yeah. I don't know. I could be wrong, but yeah, that's what we did.
It's a shame that place is gone. That was awesome.
It's a hole in the ground, and it's been filled in.
I always think it'd be a nice place to like put a huge gym.
Something. It's a sheet of grass. It looks awful.
Yeah, it's nothing now.
No.
So 30 years, and it was about 3 or 4 years ago. I think it was 20. So I started running late 2018.
Right.
And I did the 2019 marathon. And I remember, I didn't see you in the marathon, but I saw that you ran it.
Okay.
And I saw your times, and I'm thinking, oh my God, like, how is she so fat? I almost died in that marathon. Literally, like, 18, I think I almost died.
Well, the full is ridiculous, but yeah.
Did you run the full that year or was it a half? I can't remember.
I did the half that year.
Okay.
I think the last full I did was 20, I think actually it was 2018.
Okay.
Maybe 2017, actually, I can't remember, but yeah. I think it was 2018, yeah.
I remember seeing your times, regardless of whether it was a half or a full, and I was just thinking, like, that's insane. So when did you actually start running?
Well, I mean, I ran cross country a little bit and, you know, middle school dabbled into it, maybe a little bit into high school. I was never fast, though, but contrary to you, I've always loved running. I know you hate it. You hate it.
I'm starting to like it a little bit.
I don't know. Like, for me, it's always, I feel like, just been a mental escape for me. It's always just been something that throw in some headphones and, you know, head out for a 3-mile run, a 5-mile run, whatever. I'm always one of those people who like to stick to it has to be 3 miles, 5 miles, 6 miles, whatever. I can't end on, like, my watch is like 5.86. I'm like, damn it, Lainey, go. Yeah, you got to finish the 6. But I don't know. Honestly, I've always been somebody who's loved running.
Yeah.
Not that I was ever super fast, but it was just always been like, you know, here's a race and go jump into it. And
yeah.
I mean, you know, we did the Finley 5K this year that you sponsored. And I mean, I've been doing that since I think probably I was in middle school. It was so cool that like my daughter got to run that this year. And I think that was one of my first races I ever did. I could probably go back like in the, you know, stats time, or whatever. Yeah. And I mean, it's just been something that I don't know, to this day, I still absolutely love. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just so curious about that because I didn't know if, like, out of high school and between that gap, so we graduated high school in 2001 and now we're talking about a marathon in 2018, so 17 years, if you had actually started, like, devoting to a training plan for running or if it was just, hey, I really like this, it makes me feel good, and I'm going to do a lot of it, and you just started running.
I think that it was just something that, I mean, it's developed. I actually ran my first marathon in 2011.
Yeah.
And my daughter was, no, I'm sorry, 2012. My daughter was born in 2011. 2012, I ran it. She wasn't even a year yet. So I really overestimated myself and underestimated the training. And I thought, I'll be fine. And for the most part, I was. You can get out there. Anybody honestly can get out there, walk, run it.
Yeah.
That's not what I set out to do, though. But I wasn't even a year postpartum. And I thought, I'm still going to try it. And I did. And it was, I think, 90-degree weather. I mean, I distinctly remember running through Squirrel Hill and people having sprinklers and hoses out because it was so hot.
Yeah.
And I finished and it was slightly over 5 hours and I was mortified because it took me that long. And I just didn't expect it for me to take me that long.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll never do this again. I'll stick to the half. I loved the half distance. And then mentally, I couldn't stick with the fact that that time was associated with my name. I couldn't. Because I was like, someone could Google my name and find that, oh, she ran the full. And oh my gosh, it took her 5 hours. I thought she was a better runner than that. She trained. She runs all the time. And I was like, I can't let that be my last time that I ran a full marathon. So yeah. I actually stuck to a training plan and I, you know, crossed days off of my list. And I mean, I was very regimented in what I did. And when I did that in, I think it was, like I said, 2018, and it was a 3:54. So oh, wow. I cut, you know, well over an hour off, an hour and 10 minutes, basically, is what it was, I think, off of my time,
yeah.
Which I was pretty happy with, obviously. So,
yeah. Well, a sub-4 in Pittsburgh,
yeah,
is pretty tough.
That's what I was, tough. Yeah, that was my goal. My goal was 4 hours and on my watch, and I was clocking it, and I was like, okay, I think I can do this. And then, you know, I did, and I was super, super happy with the 3:54.
What is that per mile pace?
I don't know. Come on. I don't know.
Well, I was trying to figure this out today because
maybe slightly under that. I think it's slightly under that.
9 minutes.
A little bit. Yeah.
I can't do math that fast, but I was thinking about this because, so are you running this year?
I am.
Okay. You run the full or the half?
I'm doing the full.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll get into why here in a second. So I'm doing the full too. Do you have?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well, I'm trying to line up runs as a part of the training.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So is that what you're doing too?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We'll talk about my setback here in a minute whenever you're ready. But yeah, in a way.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. So I have the Sasquatch. The rabid raccoon in Raccoon State Park. Okay. That's a 100-miler. Dean Graziosis or whatever his name is, the ultra marathoner. He's actually going to be out there. I'm not going to do that. That's March 20th, I think, or March 19th. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that one yet because my daughter's birthday. So I'm trying to line that one up. But if I do it, it's only going to be a 20-miler.
Okay.
And it's trail run. And then the next one I'll have after that is actually our Sweat Bar 6.6 one, the one that you passed me in. And I couldn't catch you.
It was my birthday. Just let me have it. It was my birthday. Okay. It's my birthday.
We got to come back to that story because I kept saying, like, where is Dustin and Lainey at? Like, how have they not passed me yet? And then all of a sudden, you two don't even know each other. And then you're running together and you pass me at the same time. And Dustin kind of gave me a double tap on the back, like, oh, good job, bud.
Right.
Yeah. So
that's funny.
And then after that, I'm going to do the Pittsburgh Marathon.
Okay.
And then right after that, I'm doing in Salt Fork, Ohio. There's either a 10-mile or a 20-mile or a 50K. So 30-something-mile. I think I'm going to do the 20-mile there.
Okay.
But just as a part of the training plan.
Right.
But the Pittsburgh Marathon, like my goal this year is to do a sub-4, but to like be totally fine the next day. Like,
got it.
Be able to go back out and just keep running, which I think is going to be a very difficult goal for me. To run a sub-4 to begin with, let alone like to be up and walking. So the year that I died at mile 18, I think my time was like a 4:45, and I couldn't walk for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, bad. You're way different training though, Chad.
Well, yeah, so
for sure.
Because you talked a little bit about that, and I was thinking there's a quote in my head: "The you don't rise to the level of your expectations; you fall to the level of your training."
Yeah.
And so let's kind of roll into this now, because I feel like you sort of pulled like a Chad card where we both kind of did the same thing going into a 70.3. So for the people that don't know, anyone new listening to the show, possibly anyone that has listened to me in the past probably knows this. But so a full Ironman is a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike, 26.2-mile run. A 70.3 Ironman is half of that, right? So 1.2-mile swim, 56-mile bike, 13.1-mile run, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I get a phone call or a message that says, you're signed up and you're doing a 70.3.
That's
and
correct.
That was like August or September.
I think it was July. I feel like it was before. Maybe I just didn't tell anybody. I think that's actually what I did.
Okay.
I signed up and I was like, well, let me just think about this here for a minute. And then, yeah, I think I probably told you in August. Yeah.
Okay. So, but your 70.3 was in December.
Yes, correct.
So that's...
I see what you're getting at
here.
It's
like a four or five month training window, which... So I've had this conversation with people in the past where they say like, well, you were in shape. And there's some truth to that, to have a fitness base, but it's a totally different style of training.
100%.
So if you're not used to really training in the aerobic zone for long hours and doing, like, I had never even rode a bike more than I think like 30 miles.
Oh, I didn't even own a bike and I signed up. I didn't even own a bike.
So you sign up for a 70.3. Why did you pick Florida?
I actually chose it because it was the last one in the United States at the end of the year. And I was like, I need the longest amount of time and I'm not traveling outside of the country. So I was like, well, we'll just go to the, like, I wanted to do one by the end of the year.
Okay.
That was my thing. And I was like, well, where is the last one in the United States? I didn't care where it was. I was going to do it. And I found that it was in December in Florida. So I was like, sign me up.
Well, so as soon as I found out, because my friend Dustin, that we were just talking about, he did that one.
He did, yeah.
And I remember him telling me to do that one, or I can't remember the exact conversation, but I was scared to death because it was swimming in a lake in Florida. So
that's
the first thing I said back.
You
to
did.
Was like, do you realize you're swimming in a lake in Florida and there's like alligators, right?
Right.
No, worry
it
you at
didn't
all.
Faze me at all until like maybe you said that. And then I was like, well, there's a lot of people. And I was like, then honestly, my mindset was like, this is so terrible. If it's my time to go and it's time to be eaten by an alligator in front of all those people, so, then it's my time to go.
Yeah, we got
to
dig into this a little bit. Yeah. Because Dustin said literally almost the same thing.
Really?
Well, he was like, there's thousands of people. Mm-hmm. The odds are in my favor. If it's my time, it's my time. And I'm like, that's a really odd philosophy.
I swear that was mine. It was literally mine. We hadn't even spoken about it, but yeah, that was mine. I'm like, it can't be. Like, all these people, thousands of people heading into the water at the same time and going around this loop. Like, it was not, yeah, no, it did not faze me, honestly.
So when I was in Placid, which is in New York, yeah, there are no alligators, I did a practice swim the day before.
Yeah.
Went out, and it was like a, I don't even know. I was probably like a half mile out in the middle of the lake. And I was terrified. I kept in... You can't see underwater,
right,
but all I kept visualizing was some monster of some sort, like, taking me under.
I believe it.
Literally, like, I'm being honest about that. Like, it is freaky when you're out in the middle
of
the water.
No, I get it. 100%. I get it. Until you talked to me the day before my Ironman, and you were like, you're going to panic. And, like, you're that far out, you're going to panic. And, you know, obviously different things are going through your head. No, honestly, an alligator or whatever was not going through mine, but a different level of panic sits, and you cannot see, you know, a foot in front of you. You can't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so let's talk about that for a second. Because Dustin, I relayed that from him because that was sort of saving advice for me. We did the, so I did the Marine State Park sprint in September, which you couldn't do this year.
Right, right.
Or you couldn't do that before.
Yeah.
But that was at least a good introduction to me before I did the 70.3. And he said, you're going to panic.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to be 50 yards out and you're going to start to panic.
Mm-hmm.
And I did.
Oh, yeah.
Like, in the middle of the water, panic set in. People were all over the place. They were crawling on top of me.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, there's no way I can finish this.
Right.
And that's in a sprint, which is, like, very minuscule distance compared to what we're talking about. And so you going into that, we haven't really talked about this. I know you said, like, the advice helped.
It did.
But is it because there was, like, a panic that set in?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had never done an open water swim.
I'm going to put this a little bit closer to you.
Sorry.
Just
put it in, I had never done an open water swim.
Okay.
And I only did... Shut up, Chad. I'd only done training in a lap pool at LA Venice.
So did you actually train in a wetsuit? I think I asked you this.
Not the full distance, and I did it once. Because I didn't even buy a wetsuit. I rented a wetsuit. I didn't have a bike. I didn't have a helmet. I didn't have a wetsuit. I didn't have open water to swim in.
I love it.
I had running shoes. I mean, like, that's what I do. I'm a runner. Like, I had running shoes. That's it. I looked with my sister online. I'm like, find me an outfit to wear. Like, give me a tri suit to wear. I did get a wetsuit. I did try it in the water, but it was in the pool at Chartiers Valley. So it was not even in an open.
How far did you swim in
that? Oh my God, four laps, like 100 meters.
That's what I did. I bought a wetsuit off Amazon.
Yeah.
And I went into LA Fitness pool, swam a couple laps, felt good, and then thought I was great. And then I get to the triathlon sprint in Marine State Park and realize that I don't fit in. Like, I'm the one wearing a wetsuit that no one else is wearing. They're all wearing, like, the...
I think I felt the same way, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. My wetsuit did not look like the wetsuit everyone else was
That's
wearing.
Correct. I felt like mine... I don't know. I still don't even know. Like, if you asked me what millimeter or whatever it was I got, mine looked so thick compared to everybody else's.
That's
like,
what mine was.
What do these people have on? I'm like, they probably spent, hundreds of thousands or... hundreds or thousands of dollars in a wetsuit. I'm like, I rented mine for $50 down the street on West Liberty Avenue.
And so mine literally fit, but then it filled up with water when I got out in the middle of the lake because it actually didn't fit. It's very it's weird. Like, you have to like, they need to fit so tight that they're actually hard to get on and off.
Correct.
And mine just kind of slipped on. I thought it fit good. And it filled up with water and actually became an anchor. So it was like kind of dragging me
down
to the bottom of the water. And when I came out, Shauna actually has a picture of me. And it's hilarious now. At the time, it was not funny. But I was like, I came out of the water and this whole thing's like falling
off. Oh, I believe it. Right.
It was so bad. So I was kind of worried about that because I know that I knew you didn't.
Yeah.
I remember you not swimming open water
right.
at all, which is that. And literally Dustin, when he tried training me before the 70.3, we went to Marine State Park, just the two of us. And in the middle of the water, he said, okay, swim in front of me and I'm going to swim over top of you and I'm going to try to pull you under. Just to
try to get the best training thing you could have done.
Yeah. Just to get acclimated to it a little bit.
Yeah.
And so these are the things that I was a little bit worried about, but I think all of this is, it's not comical, but it kind of illustrates like how you pulled a Chad card and just went.
I did.
Like no real training plan. Like I'm just going to go do a 70.3. Don't have any of the stuff. And then you figure it out. So let's talk again. Let's go back to Florida. So you pick Florida and what's the, so you're planning on driving down there. The family's going to fly down.
No, vice versa. Oh. I flew and, my husband was driving my bike.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to ship it. Well, let me get back to even buying a bike because I was like, what do I buy?
Yeah.
So I went on Facebook Marketplace, kind of learned of a bike to buy for a road bike. I didn't even know there was a difference between a road bike, mountain bike, whatever, the tires. I had no idea. And I found one. It looked great. Got shipped to me. One of my neighbors is like pretty into bikes. He put it together. He was like, this is a great bike. You got a great price on it. Like, this is going to be a great bike for you to use for what you need. Right. And so I remember taking it out on the panhandle the one day. I did 40 miles. I was like, that was the longest I did on that bike.
Yeah.
One of maybe three rides I did on that bike before I decided to take it to Florida and ride it for the 70.3. And when I did the 40 miles, one, I didn't even have a helmet yet. And two, I didn't even have clip-in pedals. So I just used my tennis shoes, whatever. And my time was fine, but it was also flat on the panhandle, whatever. So I was like, okay, I need to get this to Florida, but I didn't know how to ship it. I was like, it's put together so eloquently right now. I didn't want to take it apart and attempt to put it back together. So Toby was going to drive it down. I was flying. So I had packed everything else. And then the rest of the family came with me, but they flew. And Toby was the only one that actually did drive. So that's how we got there.
So not to get super technical, but people that know anything about triathlons at this point are just like, oh my God, I can't believe
Do this.
And then the people that know nothing about triathlons. So just to dig in a little bit. So did you actually have a fitting for your bike? Did you have a general idea of like the size? Because these are things I did not know, right? Dustin actually picked my bike out for me based on his estimated size. But like pro triathletes are fitted to the centimeter on these bikes.
No.
Seat height. Handlebar height, all of that, right? No. Which makes a huge difference.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I'm looking back on it now, obviously, that would be something I would go and do. I mean, I think I looked it up online. I put my height in.
So you got a general idea on that. Mm-hmm. So, and then you mentioned the clip-on pedals. And for people that are not aware of this, so the pull, right, when your foot's clipped in, the pull-up is, it's actually helping you a lot, right? So not only are you getting momentum on the push, but you're also getting on the pull.
Right.
It's not just for you not slipping off of the pedals. It's it's helping a lot with the momentum. And then the aero bars. Did you actually have aero bars?
I did. Okay. Mm-hmm. I did. I literally just looked them up and found a pair on Amazon and ordered them and put them on.
Yep. Nice. Yeah. So I made a very costly mistake with aero bars in that I didn't know that you could get spacers to actually elevate them up off of your handlebars. So I rode with Brock one time and I saw that he had spacers on his bike. So I elevated mine and this was 3 weeks before my Ironman and it was a total like
game changer. I believe it.
On just the soreness, right? Yeah. Because you ride for an hour and things start to hurt like you're not used to hurting, right? And so when I elevated up a little bit, I'm like, how did I go through all this training in the completely wrong position, right?
Well, I didn't even know that there were spacers, so there's that. So I had no idea. Yeah. And I've said that, you know, the spacing or the height of the bars, even just the handlebars, I feel like were not correct for me. But what was I going to do? I really didn't know any better. I honestly didn't. And then I did put the aero bars on and I used them, but there was definitely some disconnect there for sure. But I was in pain. I don't know. I mean, my back killed me. I mean, that was the hardest part for me. That was the pain that I had. I just knew.
The bike. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you typically have back pain or was it just because it's a totally different?
I don't know what it was. I think it was, I mean, that was honestly the first time I ever used the aero bars was the day of the Ironman. Yeah. So, I mean, I pulled another, was like, which you never should do. I get that. I know you should never do that. But I was like, I would rest my hands on there anyways riding. So I was like, well, how could that be so much different? You know? And I was like, it can't be that much different. At least now I'll have a thing to hold on to. Right. But, you know, it could just been, you know, I just don't think it was properly set up for my height. And I never did get a proper fitting. So.
Well, so, and just to kind of set the stage here. So I don't, none of this is like, cause I've done this too. Like you just, what I love about it is it's like, okay, this is a big challenge. Let's sign up. Let's go figure it out and just do it. And I think that that's a good way to get into these kind of things.
Yeah. Right?
Like you had a fitness base, so it was going to be a lot of mental fortitude and grit and trying to figure it out. And you had to put together a training plan enough to be able to get through it.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it. So I know that like, it's easy for a very experienced person to listen to something like this and be like, you guys are crazy. Like, why did you do it that
way? Yeah. Somebody's cringing somewhere. If anybody's listening to this.
And we learned that way too, you know, but at the same time it was kind of good because it's like a way of getting out of the comfort zone.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And challenging. I mean, like you've already done a lot of the things that were to be done on the running side.
Oh yeah.
And so this was just a good challenge for you to kind of chase down and go after, and you did it, and you did it like with very little resources or time or training.
Yeah.
Or any of the things that we would want. So, was the swim the scariest part going into it?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Initially at one point I thought the swim was going to be my most, you know, nerve wracking part. And then once I started swimming a little bit more, even at the pool, I was like, I felt way more comfortable. Yeah. I remember getting in the pool the first time and was like, oh my gosh, I forget how to swim. I forget how to breathe. Like I was breathing on every stroke. And then the more I trained, I was like, I feel really good. I'm going to be fine in the swim. And then it was more for the bike. And because I've not clipped in, like I've rode Peloton and like clip in on there, but it's totally different. You're moving, right? So then I was really nervous about riding the bike. And then I started reading some of the rules, which is a disaster, and like how you can be yellow carded. I'm like, I had no idea any about this.
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And then, so then I was nervous about that. And like, you only have like a certain amount of time to pass and like your wheel has to be here. And you know what I mean? Like I had no idea any of that. So I was more, not that I couldn't ride the bike, but I was more concerned on like the technicality part of it.
Right.
And the run, I didn't care one bit about that. I was not worried at all.
Yeah.
So then even like the day of or day before leading into it, I was still like more worried about the bike. And so I have my wetsuit on. I'm ready to go. And, you know, it starts at whatever time. I think it was 6:37. I don't even remember what time it started. And I was like, I'll be in the water by 7:30. You know, people are starting to track. Well, I didn't realize like how they let people in. So they would, you know, let three people in every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And so I'm back further, like in my estimated time. And I still wasn't nervous then. And like, I start to like near up closer and I start to see my family. And I'm in like the chute getting ready. So there's three people and I'm on the far end because I could see where my family was and they have signs and whatever. And like I made eye contact with my dad and I lost it.
Yeah.
And he like reached out and grabbed my hand. And I just remember like starting to bawl then. And so I got kind of worked up then.
Yeah.
And then my watch, like I'm still using, I don't even have a good Garmin watch, Dad.
Yeah.
I'm still using this stupid, you know, Apple watch. So I go.
Let's pause for a second.
Yeah.
There's no triathlon feature on
apparently there is, but I didn't know that until after.
I think there's a way of getting something.
There is. There is. So I remember standing at the chute and like the lady is standing there and she's getting ready to let us in. And so I go to hit like open water swim and it's like not going. And they let us through. And my sister has them on video. And I trip literally the second that I walk through there because I'm trying to get my watch to go and it's not going. And I enter the water and, you know, there's only three people with me like in a row, but you know, there's a bazillion in front and there's tons behind us every 5 seconds. That 5 seconds is non-existent at that point. Then, you know, you just get in and I have, people were like, was the water cold? I'm like, I had no idea the temperature of the water.
Yeah.
And even my wetsuit still felt fine. I still to this day will say that I have no idea if that was a good wetsuit or not to wear. More than likely it was not, but it did not affect me at all. And I got in the water and, you know, I can breathe. I can put my head in the water and I can, you know, control my strokes and know what I need to breathe. I couldn't even put my head in the water, Chad, because I panicked so badly. Yeah. It wasn't even, I don't know however far you said you thought it would be out before you'd start panicking. And it was before then. And you're so right. You're just getting kicked in the head. And then people behind you start coming up. And you can't even get a stroke in without touching somebody in the same as somebody in front of you. And I panicked, and I swear I was saying, just keep swimming, just keep swimming. I did, and I was like, you know what, if I have to just keep my head above the water and do this breaststroke till I can like gather myself, and it was far, so the shape of my swim was like a backwards M,
right?
And I remember thinking, like, I would just do the spotting and I would think, okay, I need to get out to this first buoy out here. But I was so taken aback by the amount of like people on the jet skis or canoes or whatever bringing people in. I don't know, like, were they panicking or, you know, some other sort of like medical ailment? I don't know. But I like could see that too. So that screwed with me.
Yeah.
And so I just still, I'm like, okay, get your head in the water and keep going. And I would try to do like two breaths. I'm like, I feel like I've never swam a day in my life.
Yeah.
And so finally, though, I remember getting out to that first buoy, like out at like the point of the M, and I was like, okay, I feel like I can do this. And I rounded the turn, and like at no point, though, do you ever not stop kicking somebody, hitting somebody, somebody's doing the same to you from the beginning of it to the end. But I finally found some sort of like a rhythm, and I remember just navigating it. And I worked on boxed breathing for a long time, too. And I totally forgot how to do that, like on the first whatever, however many yards it would have been out to that first buoy. And then when I started like thinking to myself, and like I've never had more of like a mental discussion with myself.
Yeah.
It's so crazy to think how much you need to pump yourself up, for lack of a better term, you know? I mean, and saying like, you can do this, you've practiced, you've trained, you can do this, even though you've never done it in open water, you can do this, you know, and getting around those turns and seeing other people. And, you know, finally, then once you get around that last turn, and I could see like I had one straight away, and I didn't care how long it was going to take me. And I knew time was not going to be a factor, but I would like look up, and like then I would, just the closer I would get, I'm like, I'm that much closer, I'm that much closer. And I remember listening to some podcast about swimming for a triathlon prior to it, and I remember them saying like, just you have to keep swimming until you touch the bottom of the water.
Sorry.
You're good. Jeez. Touch the bottom of the sand or whatever it was, you know. And so I was like, Elaine, you're going until you hit that, and when you hit that, then you can stand.
Yeah.
And I remember hitting that, and I was like, I felt like I accomplished the biggest feat of my entire life. And I mean, looking back on it, it's like 1.2 miles. And you know, to some, it might sound like a lot, and to others, it may not. But I felt so accomplished. I really did. And looking at the pictures, and you see, you know, all those race photos that they give you, and you're like, oh my God, you look awful. And I remember like trying to take my goggles off, and just, I looked relieved, as a lot of people said. And I was so, it was the hardest thing. And it's, again, it's only 1.2 miles, but it was one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Yeah.
For sure. Well,
and I give you major kudos for controlling the mindset in the water and the chaos, because it is, it's hard to describe to people that have never been through it. Because even when Dustin said that to me, I was thinking, well, you know, it's not that far out.
I'm right.
Fine. I can float if I have to.
But right.
It's a real panic.
It is.
That can set in. And when you have everyone kicking you.
Oh, yeah.
It gets very scary very fast. And here's the thing about it. So a lot of people I've talked to about triathlons that have never done it, they always say, I don't think I could do the swimming. Mm-hmm. Like that's the thing that they, and honestly, not only is the swimming very disproportionate to the entire ultra endurance race, right? Like it's a very, very small piece to the whole thing, but it's, if you swimming, what I've learned, cause I wasn't a very good swimmer, once you start doing it and you find your pace, you can actually swim for hours.
Oh my gosh,
It's not the distance that's really challenging in these races. It's the fact that you're in an environment that's very chaotic.
Yep.
And trying to control your breathing. And it's at the start of the race, right? So that's when all your adrenaline's going.
Yeah.
And you're fueled, because if you did all your fueling coming into the race, like that's when you have all the energy and you're ready to go. So it's just this mixture of things that happen.
Yeah.
And in the race that I did, Lake Placid, it was you had to do a loop twice.
Okay.
And they actually had an underwater cable that was, it was like yellow, so you could follow it.
Oh, wow.
As a sighting. Okay. So you didn't have to sight. The problem is everyone's fighting for that line.
Right.
Because you could only, the visibility was only like 3 or 4 feet.
Okay.
So you had to be pretty close to the line to be able to see it and follow it. And just for people that might not have a clue what we're talking about, there's buoys out there that you have to follow. So the buoys are typically in front of you. So you have to figure out how to spot. So you bring your head up every now and again to see where they're at and make sure you're going the right direction. Because typically in open water, you'll swim all over the place unless you're very experienced.
Yeah.
Right? You're going right, left. And so that's what happens when you get in these races. I've actually had people coming perpendicular to me.
Oh, yeah.
Run into me. And
yep.
I'm like, where direction are you going?
Right.
You know? So I did, I was going out and I was coming back on the first loop.
Okay.
And I had two guys that were really not great swimmers. And it's, when I say that, I mean like they're fine. They're going to get through it.
Yeah.
But they're very like slappy.
Yeah.
You know, like big, big strokes and hitting the water really hard, kicking really hard. And I thought one of them's going to like knock me unconscious if I don't get away from them. So I had an opportunity where my head was kind of at their feet and I just thought I'll split them really fast and I'll just get away from them. And so when I accelerated to split through them, my leg cramped.
Oh my
gosh.
And
I'm thinking like, this is the worst thing that could have happened
right.
because you can't swim. Like, I mean, my one leg was totally out. So now I'm swimming all arms.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm still trying to get away from these two yahoos that are just like
all over the place,
yeah,
right?
All over the place.
Right?
And I'm thinking, oh my God, like I'm like 30 minutes into this race and I'm going to be done like right off the bat. So then the panic sets in,
it
right?
Does.
So it's not the distance.
No.
That's the challenge. It's just if you're not very familiar with that kind of environment,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to get used to that and it's hard to train for it.
It is.
You can't simulate that anywhere, right?
And that was my problem is, you know, I decided to do this in what, August or something, and it was in December. And I mean, we're heading into fall season. Where are you going to go other than like Moraine State Park? And I'm a teacher, and so I couldn't do it. They had open water swims on Mondays. I don't even know until how long, but I couldn't even do that. So, I mean, I've been swimming in a lake before, but not intentionally swimming a distance, you know? So that was by far the hardest part, by far.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. you come out of the water and you're going in the transition. So people that don't understand this, like you had one transition area or
yes,
two?
Yes, one okay. area. Yeah.
yeah so mm-hmm. basically you start the swim, you come out of the water, you go into a transition area, you take your wetsuit off, you put
mm-hmm.
your bike gear on,
yep.
your bike's there waiting for you, you take off on your bike, you come back on your bike into the transition area, you get out of your bike gear, you put on your shoes, and you go for a run. You're
yep.
in the same outfit the entire time,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did.
So you come out, you go into the transition area,
yep.
and now you're starting your bike.
So, yeah. So, well, I come out of the transition area, and it's farther than I thought. I mean, you not walk it, but you see it, you know, as you're, like, setting everything up the day before. But I still didn't realize it from where you're coming out of, like, the beach. Now, mine was a lake, but it was still a beach, you know,
yeah.
where you entered and exited. So I'm coming out, and I remember taking off my cap, and I remember having my goggles. I remember starting to unzip my wetsuit. And somehow I lost my goggles from the time I got out of the water until the time I got to my bike, which I didn't care. You know, I didn't need them anymore. But still, I lost my goggles. You're just so out of it. I really was. So I'm coming in. You're in your bare feet and you're running through the cement. I guess it was cement. Like little pebbles and it's there, but it's not affecting you because you're like, you're just so focused on what's next. So I come out and I could see some of my family on each side of me and where I was in the transition area so they could see me. And taking off my wetsuit, putting on, so you had told me really only the day before, like not even using socks. So I had never even considered not using socks for my
run,
shoes.
Run
no,
bike,
my
yeah,
shoes.
Yeah.
yeah. Or cycling. Yeah. And so I put those on, did not even bring socks. Well, I did for the run, but I left them in there. And I didn't put my bib on yet because I thought I don't need it until the run. And I had my water bottles on my bike. I'm getting my bike set up, ready to go. And I'm just so excited to get on the bike and go. Get my helmet, start heading out. Now I'm in like the chute to get out of there. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot all my fuelings. I had nothing with me. And I can't turn around. I had all my stuff. I had stuff like a little bit that I wanted to eat like right then and there, but I was so just concerned on getting out of there. And then I had stuff that I was putting like, I had like in the back of my singlet, like a little, you know, pocket and stuff and, you know, some things on my bike. So just some little things I just wanted to take with me. And I totally forgot. I was like, shit, what am I going to do? So I just start going. I'm like, well, I'll just have to stop at the first stop, you know? Yeah. And so I get on the bike and I'm fine getting going. And the beginning part of it was really cool in the way you're going through this like little town in Haines City is where I was. And I thought it was like every 15 miles maybe or something like that. And then it ended up being 18, which was fine. So I lead up to my, and I'm cruising now. Like I'm at a good speed. And I was like, this sucks that I have to stop. And I was not hungry. I was fine because I was hydrated on my bike. I was not hungry in the least, but I knew what my body needed. Like I knew I was going to need it for what was to come. I was totally fine for then. So I'm like, I'm in a really good rhythm. I feel so good. I don't want to stop, but I know I'm going to need to. And I didn't know that I could like go on my bike and like grab a banana or whatever it was at the time. So it's like, I'm going to have to like come off to the side of the road. So I see it. It's approaching. I'm going. And I go to get off and I like pull myself off to the side of the road and I go to step down and I thought I was unclipped out of my left side and I wasn't. And so I'm thinking I'm clipped out. So I step down hard and I just bite it right to the left side. And so I end up with this huge, and like the nicest thing though is like the people there are, oh my gosh, they're unbelievable. Like no one's laughing at you. No one's like, you know, pointing at you, whatever. They rush to you. Even people that are there and stopped, you know, that are also racing, making sure you're okay. Like, do you need anything? What can I get for you? Are you all right? You know, whatever. They are the sweetest, kindest people that you discuss anything with along the course in those races. It really is. So I get my, I don't even know, I was like, I did all this and I stopped for a fig bar. I ate a fig bar. And then I grabbed a banana and ate half of it and I like threw it off. So I'm like going, I'm like, okay, now I have to get back on the road, you know, and you have cars. This is not a closed course. So you have cars going. You have people that are on their bikes that are not stopping at the aid stations. You have people that are stopping at the aid stations. You have to like figure out and maneuver back into traffic. Yeah. So I start going and then there's like all of a sudden this big like influx of people start coming. And I was like, shit, I can't go in now. So I have to like wait a second. So then I'm waiting. I start to go a little bit and I clip in and I clip in on hard on the other side and I missed it. And guess what? I went over.
Oh man.
Again. And I mean, I was already bleeding here.
You had a fast bike time, especially for two crashes.
Well, and then I didn't stop again because of that, because that was only in the first transition. And I was like, I am not stopping again. And I was like, I don't care if I need something. And I learned and I could grab a banana on the way. I'm like, I can do this, Lainey. You can do this. And so I grabbed a banana at one other point. And then I did. And you told me the day before, too, about you hoped I brought a water bottle that I was okay with throwing away with. And I was. And that was super helpful too, because on the last one I had maybe like, I don't know, 15 or 18 miles left. And I tossed that water bottle and I got a Gatorade bottle and I stuck it in. And so that was super helpful. And you know, I didn't know what to expect on the course. You can't go out and preview 56 miles in a city that you're unfamiliar with. But I loved it. And I think I told you this or explained it like right after the race is like, you know, you can't use headphones. So for anybody who doesn't know, you can't use headphones.
Yeah.
And people, when I tell them that, they're like, oh my gosh, how do you do that? And I was, you know, kind of nervous about it at first. And I was like, no, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
I enjoyed 56 miles of biking through the back, like little bit of city streets. But I tell you what, like there was so much country in where I was in Florida that it was just amazing. Like taking it all in and seeing, you know, just the most random things and just taking that time for yourself. When else do you do something like that? And you're out in nature. And I mean, it was super cool for 56 miles to take that in. And it's not like it dragged at any given point. And, you know, at one point, somebody actually told me, they're like, don't look at your miles per hour. Don't do that. You know, you're going to like, that's going to get caught up in your head. And I did it first. And that's when I told you, like, I was cruising. But then I quit looking at it and I was like, just take it in. Like, why are you concerned with how fast you're going or how, like, again, my goal was to finish. I had no idea what I wanted to do it. And I just wanted to finish. So I was like, why am I looking at this to see what time, you know, it is or how much I have left or how fast I'm going and like trying to like play arithmetic in my head to see. But it was so cool. And, you know, even traveling on the road with cars and other bikes that pass you. And I mean, you really get to see people spend a lot of money on bikes.
Yeah,
you know, I'm like, I got mine on Facebook Marketplace, you know, these people. And like, and then so I'm riding, you know, and I'm like holding on and people could see my elbow because when I had fallen, you know, yeah. I mean, I had a good, you know, burn and blood's gushing out of me. And but again, people are so nice and they're like, are you OK? Like you, your elbow is jacked up, you know, and they would make funny conversation, but they're just so nice, you know. And but people spend a lot of money on bikes. They were like, I'm like, oh, there's got to be a motor on there. They're cheating. I know there's got to be a motor on there.
Yeah, it's I think the bikes definitely give people an advantage, but some people are just really good at biking.
They have to be.
I felt like I was standing still.
Same. You know, yeah,
just flying by you. And the other piece of it is that we've never really trained these muscles.
Right, so, like, right.
If you're biking a little bit more frequently than we were biking going into these, I think you can keep up a little bit. Because I noticed a pretty significant difference between my two Ironmans.
Yeah.
Because the second one I was actually kind of biking and training for a lot more. Definitely about 10 times more than I did for the first one.
Right.
And there was a pretty significant difference there. But I think what you said is, just to kind of go back to that, is it's important because a lot of people do find it very crazy that you're not allowed to use music, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually a safety thing.
Because, I think so.
Yeah, they don't want you being so distracted.
Right.
But the reality is exactly what you said, and I don't think people realize this. When you're in that, right, you kind of spoke about your family being there, mm-hmm. and you spoke about the environment and the energy and the people. That's actually Shauna's favorite part. It's the culture
of
the people that are there. Everyone is there. Everyone there is like wanting you to do well.
You're right.
Like,
yeah.
And it's you're surrounded by so many people that are just positive and happy and helping. Mm-hmm. And it's all for the contribution of the, like, they want everyone to do really, really well.
Right.
And when you see that level of outpouring and support and care, it really impacts you. So what, for me, one of the biggest things that I've taken away from these events is I try to think of it like this, like, I don't want it to end.
Right.
Because you're actually in the moment, right? You are. And you're taking it all in. And for that very short time, so people ask, like, how long these take, like 6 hours, 7 hours, which, by the way, I think I guessed all of your segments.
You pretty much did. You did. I was within, almost to a T.
I was within 5 minutes on every single year, swim, bike, and run. But
you did.
However long they take, 6, 7 hours, full Ironman, 14, 15 hours, like they're that, but it seems long. But in the grand scheme of things, it's actually short, right?
Yeah.
It's your short escape from the world, mm-hmm. where the whole day is about you and these other competitors. You towed the start line. You put in the work. Now you're out there and you're in it. You're in the arena.
Yeah.
And all the noise goes away. The chaos of the world, the things that you worry about every single day that don't really matter, right? The day-to-day, like, oh, I got in this conversation with this person. I had that thing happen over there and this person's mad at me for this. And all of that's just gone. And you're in it, and you're figuring out who you are and what you're really capable of, you know, because it's stripping you down. It takes away all of your ego.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said before, you don't rise to the level of your expectations. It doesn't matter how good you expect to do. You're going to fall to your training.
What you're training, yeah.
And then after the physical is out, now it's all mental,
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to figure out, how do I keep going?
Yeah.
How do I keep pushing forward? But that in and of itself is actually what a lot of people, including myself, chase. That we chase that moment where you're in the most pain you've ever been in,
mm-hmm.
because it's then and there that you get into this kind of flow, magical state where you surprise yourself and figure out what you're truly capable of. So everything you've ever been mad about yourself before, you start making yourself a little bit proud.
Yeah.
Right? And so all the years of being hard on yourself and doing this and doing that, now you're like, okay, I'm in it, and I'm gonna keep pushing forward. So I think what you said there was really awesome, because that's what I don't think people that don't do these kind of events, they think like all these people are crazy, right? And they're just out there like doing these, honestly, like the Ironman for me, I think that entire bike ride, when I look back on it, I feel it felt like an hour.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in it, it doesn't feel like it. It feels like forever. But looking back on it, like there's only segments of it that I even remember.
Same, yeah.
You know, it just kind of flew by. So the bike, you wrecked twice?
Well, I hate to say, I did. I fell over at the very first aid station. I fell twice getting to the aid station, thinking I was unclipped out and I was not. And then thinking I was clipped in already. I was having already issues. Let me back up for a second on my bike. Okay. So the night before, Ironman was Sunday, Friday night, I'm getting everything ready to take to, you have to have everything set up, obviously, the day before. So Friday night, I'm getting things set up, ready to go, my bag, stuff, and packed. And I go, and I have my cycle shoes, and I'm trying to clip into my pedals. I'm like, what is wrong? There's something, like, not right.
Oh, boy.
And Yotobi's like, they had it up in Pro Bike and Run, and they put you in there, and your pedals worked, and your cycle shoes clipped in. And I don't know what the problem is. I'm like, there's something wrong. There's not something right here. So here, long story short, we come to find out the wrong clip-ins we had on the bike and the correct clip-ins for, or the correct pedals are in Pittsburgh and we're in Haines City, Florida. And I'm like, oh my God, what the heck am I going to do? So I'm Googling and my dad's helping me Google Friday night, like, where's their bike shops in Haines City? Who's going to help me? And I'm like, these people are going to probably look at me like, who is this novice showing up the day before the Ironman, like, and doesn't have correct pedals? So I find this bike shop. My whole family's in Animal Kingdom now. They left me high and dry, which I was like, this is great. I just need the day to myself anyways to collect myself and just prepare myself.
Yeah.
So I find this bike shop and this guy was fantastic. If I could remember his name, I would like shout him out because he was so wonderful. I take my bike to him. I take my shoes. I'm like, my husband guarantees me that these pedals or my shoes fit these pedals. And please tell me they don't because I can't. He was like, no, you have the wrong pedals on. I'm like, I thought so. And my other ones are in Pittsburgh. So please, dear God, help me.
Yeah.
And he did. He switched them out. He had me out. I was like, and then he just did a whole like just quick tune up on my bike and just made sure my air pressure was fine and everything. So that was, again, leading up to it. So, you know, I was still kind of a little bit iffy with the new pedals that I had anyway. So that's why I feel like, at least that's what I'm blaming it on, Chad, that I couldn't properly clip in and or out of my pedals.
Oh,
so, but I never wrecked after that. So after those first months, but which did like screw me up in terms of like I said before, I was in such a good groove and like, I just felt so good.
Yeah.
I didn't want to stop, but I knew my body was going to need fuel. So I knew what I needed to get and you know, I sacrificed a couple minutes and a battle wound. So it was fine. But
you mentioned the water bottle transition. So that was something that Dustin passed on to me as well, which was a good tip. It's so for the people that might not be following this, when you're on the bike coming into aid stations, a lot of the bikers don't want to stop, right? So the volunteers are holding Gatorade bottles that you're just, they're yelling Gatorade or water, and you're telling them what you want. And so the idea is that you fill up your water bottle with the Gatorade or whatever you want in it. And then by the time you get to an aid station, you can just throw that water bottle away, take one of the Gatorades and put it in your bike holder and carry on. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good trick, but like I haven't stopped. I think I stopped at in North Carolina, I stopped at an aid station on the bike. I didn't in Placid at all. And I wish I would have, because that ended up costing me pretty big time. That's a whole nother story. We don't have to get into that. My fueling strategy was really bad.
So I remember you saying that.
I was trying to, my coach wanted me to do the whole thing on Gatorade Endurance without eating. And I got pretty sick. So drinking Gatorade Endurance for 13 hours tends to mess up your stomach a little bit. Especially when it's like 90 degrees and you're like exerting all that energy.
Right.
I wish I would have stopped. I didn't stop. You're supposed to like pee two times, I think, on the bike in that race. I didn't go to the bathroom at all. So I was pretty messed up.
Yeah.
A lot of lessons learned on that. But going back to your pedal, they say that with any kind of triathlon like this, the 70.3s and above, you come in thinking there's three events, but there's always four. There's something that always happens.
Always.
you know, during a race that you're going to have to figure out how to accommodate. So you didn't get a flat tire.
No, my God. Yeah. You were like, do you have a CO2? I'm like, I don't even know what he's talking about. And my book bag or behind me, I'm like, no, I'm not carrying any of that. And all I could think about, I saw three people along the course. And I'm like, my heart broke for them. Yeah. And if I could have helped them, because I have no idea how to change a spare tire, I would have never, ever. I don't know, it mind boggles me. It really does. Like, if I could have stopped and helped them along the way, I would have, but I could offer nothing but like moral support. Like, you got this, you can do this. But I, thank God, knock on wood. And I honestly like said that along the way, like, please don't let me get a flat tire. Please don't. And I know that there's people along the course that would come and help you, but I was not mentally prepared for that. And thank goodness you're like, just avoid the like potholes and you'll be okay. And I did. I mean, and you know, it worked.
I'm always surprised at how many people I see with flat tires, because you go into it thinking that you're going to be on the road. Like, what could possibly like pop a tire? But those tires are so thin.
So thin.
And so light. Yeah. That, it doesn't take much. And actually, I got – so Shauna bought me all the stuff to fix my tire, to see it. Like, we learned this in North Carolina. My bag actually fell off my bike during the ride. So if something would happen to me, I would have been screwed.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't have anything to fix the tire. And so she bought me all this awesome stuff to easily fix the tire. Well, I took it all off because I was training on my trainer.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't put it back on. So when I went out on a road ride, I was out in, I think I was like 30 miles out from here. I was in West Virginia.
Okay.
And it went from pavement to gravel. As soon as I hit gravel, blew a tire. Oh, and I was just done. Like, I couldn't do anything. She had to come 30 miles
out. Pick you. Oh, my gosh.
Which, it just shows how easy it can happen in a race. Like, right. It's definitely something my coach was like, you got to be ready to fix a tire.
Oh, for sure.
So coming off the bike, now you're going into the run. Mm-hmm. And just to settle up for people, because we talked about you as a runner, that's probably like the thing that you're definitely the best at, right?
Yeah, never even for sure. Like,
biked and swam before.
Right.
And so they call it brick training, right? So brick training is where you train by going in the water, coming out, going onto a bike, going on a bike, coming off, and going into a run. So you're getting your body acclimated to that transition.
Yeah.
Did you do a lot of brick training where you were actually in the water, came out of the water, went and ran, or was this like first time you would actually?
The only sort of training I did like that was from bike to run.
Yeah.
That was it. I never did.
But what was that like? Was that like one time?
Yeah. actually maybe twice now that I think back to it. And it was the longest bike ride I did. And I came off of
how long
that was that? A 40-mile bike ride I did.
So, and just to set the context again, it's a 56-mile bike ride.
That's correct.
Ride. So
you're
still 16 miles short of the full distance.
Okay. So 40 miles on the bike, on the trail, and I ran, I can't remember, it's either 8 or 10. I actually ran with
that's pretty good.
Ashley
that's pretty
Scott. Good. You know Ashley Scott? Yeah. So she met me. I was like, I said, I'll be there in 10 minutes or whatever. Yeah. And she, so I put my bike back in my car. And then I think it was 8. We did 8 miles then. Which,
that's good. That's a good training run.
And I honestly felt good. I thought I was going to feel worse. Just heading into it, the mentality, I was like, this is not going to be good. But because, you know, and you might know this just from any training stuff, and people were like, oh, that's a flat course. Well, like, a flat course is not always the best course. Like, I ran a half marathon in Cleveland back on Halloween, and it was a flat course, and it was one of the hardest courses I've ran, because if you're running on a flat course, like, your muscles don't get the chance to change. Like, running uphill, you're using different muscles. Running downhill, you're using different muscles. Right. When you're running pretty much flat,
it's
so boring. Oh, my gosh. Like, as much as you think, and then you're counting streets, and you see, like, 3rd Street and 4th Street, and you're like, you know you got to go to 26. You're like, oh, my God, what am I in for? It was one of the hardest things. So even, you know, my bike ride was all flat. My run was all flat. So I was not expecting to feel even as good as I did afterwards. But the transition from my bike to run.
Yeah, it's so, a race now, right?
Yeah. I'm back at the race. And I was in transition longer than I wanted to be, but I had to pee so bad too.
Yeah.
And there was only 2 porta-johns where I was, and both were utilized at the time. So I was like, okay, fine, still I'll. Whatever, I was waiting, and there was like not waiting, so I had my shoes on. I had to get my race bib on, which I was kind of, I was not dehydrated, I was not like under fueled, but I was just I don't know. I can't even give a word for it. But so I was trying to put my race bib on and it's so crooked. And I was so having to pee so bad. So I'm doing that in line as I'm waiting to go to the bathroom. And then finally somebody comes out and it was on. And I was like, oh, I'll fix it after I come out of the bathroom. So I went and peed and then I came out and then I just forgot about it. So like if you look at my pictures, my race bib's all crooked and it was a mess. But I didn't eat anything from the transition from the bike to the run. I did have, I don't use a liquid IV. I use the, what is it? Element, whatever it is. So I drank maybe like a half a bottle of that just for some electrolytes. Nice. And it was hot by this point. And I mean, we're talking Florida hot, but it was still maybe only like 75. It felt so much hotter. That was a beautiful day. I mean, the sun was shining. So the most, and you said this, the hardest part mentally is you're starting the race and there's some people finishing the race. Yeah. You're starting the run. I'm sorry. You're starting the run and you're like, okay, I have 13.1 miles to run. But there's people that are coming through the chute finishing the entire course, the entire Ironman, you know? Yeah. And it's like, that's very humbling. And I'm like, oh my God, I got 13.1 miles to run now. But I'm like, Lainey, it's your race. These people do this, you know.
Which for people that don't even know that, like we're talking over 2 hours of a run.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
These people are plus They're 2 hours done. Ahead of you. Yeah.
Yeah. And so mine was two loops. Yeah. And it was cool though when you're coming back through that second loop. But it is, again, very humbling because people are coming through that run, that shoot again to be done. I'm like, man, what I wouldn't give to go in there. But like I was not, my body was not ready to be done yet. It wasn't like I was still on the adrenaline and going. And I was like, I have one more loop to go and I'll be fine. And you know the course now what you're doing and you know what you're up against. And I remember running and we had, so my watch died. I did get back to my watch when I got out of
the. I knew it died before you even.
I know. So when I got out of the swim back up, when I got out of the swim, I went to like switch it to so I could go to bike and it never registered to swim. I'm like, God dang it. Yeah. Forget it. So it did work on the bike. I did get it. I did, was able to do it for the bike. And then I was able to do between 8 and 9 miles on the run. And then it just died. I mean, it's just a stupid Apple Watch. So at this point, I know I have about 3 or 4 miles left. And so I'm running down this one street and we're in this residential neighborhood. And, you know, you have these people that are just setting up tents and stuff in their yard and just loving it, you know. And this guy, so I heard somebody say whatever miles left. And I said, I'm sorry, how much do we have left? My watch died. And he goes, we got a 5K left. That's it. And he's like, if you can do this, I can do this. And he goes, I'm 70 some years old. This is my 6th Ironman. I'm like, oh my God. Like, that's, I just cool, look at though. This guy. I'm like, you are like such my inspiration. Yeah. I love this. And we ran together for a little bit. And then, but I knew I had like less than a 5K left. And I just knew that I could get it. And I knew, I mean, just knowing my family was at the finish line. Oh, yeah. And I mean, that's the coolest thing. And you're coming through. I remember listening to another podcast at one point, you know, and someone's like, see if you can recall the, like, do you remember the song that was playing when you came through, whenever you came through? Right. Oh, so like they were talking about that on the one podcast that I was listening to. Like some people like distinctly remember the song that was playing when you entered through like your final shoot and, you know, came across the finish line. I'm like, I have no idea. Even though in my head, I was mentally trying to think about that, but just the way it worked out for me, there was nobody directly right in front of me. And I mean, there might've been people right behind me, but nobody that was like sprinting to pass me. So I was able to take in that finish line shoot. And just, awesome. I mean, it was, I mean, I'm crying. You're crying. Yeah. How can you not be? You're so emotional. And as much as you don't want to be, you're going to be.
Yeah.
And I could find my family. I could see them. And it's just, you cross that. And I mean, it's just, it's an overwhelming, amazing. Yeah. I mean, I'm bawling, you know, but it's like good, obvious tears.
Well,
but
that's the other piece that I think a lot of people don't realize is, or recognize, is that it's just such an emotional height.
Like,
it's very hard to reach those kind of emotions without going through something like that. And that's what it's all about. Like the reason it feels that way is because of how hard it all was, you know? And unfortunately, or fortunately, you can't really ever feel that kind of feeling unless you go through the shit, you know?
Yeah.
You got to go through it all.
Yeah.
And it's funny. So I'll give you a couple just to make you feel a little bit better about like people finishing, you know, while you're still out on the run. Well, just to talk about the music. So I didn't even know this. Mike Riley, mm-hmm. who is the famous Iron Man announcer.
Yeah.
He was the guy that called me out coming into the finish line. I didn't even know it was him. And he just retired right after that. Like, he had done a couple more Ironmans.
Wait, he doesn't do them anymore?
He's done. He
really?
Retired. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And this guy's like 30 years of doing this. And he has probably done thousands of Ironmans.
Sure.
And there's so many people that like that's their thing, right? Like Mike Riley
calls your name, yeah.
And I didn't even know it was him, but luckily Christine or Jason or someone has it on camera coming across, so when I go back and watch it, I can hear
it. You can hear it, yeah.
And I can hear his voice, but I didn't, like, I heard him call my name, but I didn't put two and two together. There was like Mike Riley,
right.
And then to go back to the people finishing. So Adam Wicks,
for sure.
So he's reaching out to me on Instagram because he realizes that I'm doing North Carolina.
Yeah.
He's doing North Carolina. I didn't know this at the time, but he was actually trying to qualify for Kona.
Okay.
So long story short, for the people that don't know much about this, Kona is the world championship. So if you're not pro, you're amateur and you're kind of in age ranges. So based on your age range, like mine would have been 35 to 39, you can do the 70.3s or the full Ironmans to try to qualify for Kona. So you have to be in the top of the people in that age group, and you get an invite to come out to Kona and compete, and the pros are there and they're all competing, etc. It's the world championship. It's not in Kona, Hawaii anymore, but it was in Kona, Hawaii.
I forget the other one. There's like, they're going to split up. So men and will go there 1 year and women will go other place. And then they're going to switch the following year. Yeah, I forget where the other one's.
France or something.
Maybe.
Like that. Yeah. There's actually a guy at LA Fitness that, he's like 72 and he got an invite a couple years back.
Oh, okay.
But it kept getting pushed because of the COVID and everything.
Yeah.
But he told me he's going out to France. But there's actually, if anyone's really interested on YouTube, if you just Google like Ironman World Championship Kona, there's Subaru sponsors. They put together pretty good documentaries that are free to watch. And they're fun too, because they don't only highlight the pros, which are just ridiculously fast, and I'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
They pull like some special stories of some of the age group people that that qualified, and they're there. Some, you know, some people with disabilities, first time like ever did an Ironman with no legs and stuff like that. So they're pretty cool documentaries. But Adam Wicks, so he's reaching out to me, and I didn't know this, but he's trying to qualify for Kona. He only missed it by two or three places, but I'm just like, he's talking about meeting up and this and that, and I'm just so nervous about the race that I'm not even like really paying attention to his messages coming through. So anyway, I get off the bike and I'm going to start the run, and he's standing there. Like, I hear someone say, go Chad. And there's a woman next to her, and they're like, go Chad. And I'm like, who the hell are these people in North Carolina that know me? And then I realized it was him. I was just starting my run. He was already done. Plus 2 hours. And then in Placid, we were coming in, I think we still had like 3 or 4 miles left on the bike.
Okay.
And they were announcing the pros coming in. So they had finished the marathon before we even got off the bike.
That's unbelievable.
Like, they're like,
oh my God.
I think the first place guy was like 6.5 hours in front
of me.
Oh my
God.
Something like that.
That's unbelievable.
It's unreal. So let's go back to the emotions, because I like the family being there. I think that's a huge part, right?
Yeah.
So I remember like coming out Placid, seeing my sister, Kevin, like Sean, I knew would be there because it's
early
in the morning. So your family's at the start line.
Yeah.
Right? The emotions start right then and there. Did you see them again until were they at the transition and you saw them every time you came into the transition?
So
who was all there?
Okay. So, my kids were there. My husband, kids were there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's like something awesome.
It was
for your kids to be able to see that.
That is really cool for them to, and they knew what I was training for.
Yeah.
Yeah. My neighbor, was there. She got shirts made. So like I could see all of them in their shirts. It was like the periodic table, like the element thing, although it was supposed to be on the front of the shirt and somehow it got printed on the back of the shirt. So you could see it was the front. It was just plain gray, but on the back it was like, and it said, LA, I think, or no, it said FE for iron. And then it said Iron Laney or something underneath of it, which was a cool, like, and it looked like a periodic table, you know, but it was on the back. But regardless, they all had them. So it was Toby, my kids, my neighbor, her daughter, my dad, my stepmom, my sister, her friend.
That's great. So they, yeah. What are they? They all drove down?
No, everybody flew except for Toby. Oh, just Toby. Yeah. Yeah, he was the only one. That's but we all, there, yeah, we all flew, good stuff, and Toby. We Shout rented. Out to Toby. Yeah, right. So we rented a big house. So all of us stayed in the house, yeah, which was cool. Which I was nervous about because I was like, listen, we have strict bedtimes, like the night before, you know. But then here it was so cute. They were like up making signs, that's and cool. you know, it was neat. So I saw them. Toby dropped me off the morning of, you know, because I wanted to be there like extra early. He went back and got all of them, and I remember texting him. I was like, this place is jamming right now, like good luck finding a parking space. And if you want to get to the transition, like you better wake that house up and get them here now. So I'm in, like getting ready to, like on the beach before I even got to the shoot, and like I'm looking for them, I can't find them anywhere. And then I spotted Toby, and then he told me where they were. And so I saw them, you know, right as I was entering the water. I saw them, what they were right at the not even at my transition, they were literally on the beach part when I got out of the water. They ran up and found me where that's I was awesome. In transition. So you could see me from two different ways. Like one way was from like inside of where like all the tent action and everything was, but then on the other side was where you came out from the bike. So I saw them when I was leaving on the bike, and then I didn't see them at any other point until the very end. Yeah. So I came back from the bike and I didn't get to see any of them. And here the, you know, the tracker got kind of jacked up at one other point. So my dad and Toby thought that they were meeting me at right, like at a time. And here I was already through transition.
So they were tracking you through like the Ironman.
Yeah. Yeah. And they thought they were going to get me at transition, but here I was already through it, but the app hadn't caught up yet. So, which was fine, whatever. I was on my run. And so just the way that the course was, you couldn't, I mean, unless they were like out along the course, you know, but they were all there then at the finish line, which was just
really cool how they had that all set up.
Oh, it was so awesome.
Like tunnel. Yeah.
It was that's really awesome. Neat. And it was so cool because I could see them all. And, you know, even again, I was the only one there. And it's not like my, oh, just my family was cheering. You have all those spectators and they don't know me from whoever, you know, and they're just cheering you on. And I do remember hearing my name. No idea again what the song was. And, but they were standing literally right at the finish line. And then they met me like after the little thing. And it was, I mean, it's just so emotional. Yeah. There's no other word to describe it. It's so that's unreal. Cool. Yeah.
They all have to be so proud of you.
That's amazing. It was cool.
So you did you sign back up for Florida?
I did.
is it in December?
It is. And then I think I learned from you that like you can transfer it though.
Yeah.
So I signed up. They get you, Chad. They like sign up within a week and you'll get a discount. It's like, who cares? I paid the full price to begin with anyways. I would have still done it. But so I did. I signed up for it again. I probably will not do that one. I'm looking at one of the September ones.
So Penn State's launching one this year.
Penn State
main campus. 70.3. It's going to be the first time they ever have one. You finish in the stadium. Finishing in Penn State Stadium.
Yeah.
So, is that on your radar? Or?
It's not because I'm away. I'm not going to be
like
around.
July 4th
weekend. We're away the 4th of July weekend. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, I've really.
So what's the September one?
So there's a couple. So there's the Maryland one.
Yeah, so that's full. Yeah. So are you thinking full?
So, yeah, I am. But, and I think I told you, I need the whole summer to train. Me being a teacher, there's no other way for me to really do hard. It other than if I would do it in, you know, September. So, and you know, I'm back in grad school, so I got a lot going on. Yeah. So that's still on my radar. It's not out of question yet, but I really need to make the decision soon since it's February.
Well, outside of the training, the time frame is the full like something you really want to do.
It is.
So you're going after it.
I am at some point. Yeah. So I don't know. The otherwise the half. So they you just see the new New York one. They just released one in Jones Beach, New York or something.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah, I want to say it's like the third week in September. I want to say something like that.
Yeah.
Or the one in Wisconsin. So they have where Adam Wicks lives. in Madison, Wisconsin, you can do half there where you end. Yeah. And I think in Badger Stadium there too. So
that'd be really cool.
Yeah. So
it's just getting the bike everywhere that sucks.
It is. You're going to make Toby drive to where's he going next? So I don't know. It's like
going to Cali. Toby.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. So we'll see. I mean, right now I'm just working on, you know, doing some training for the full marathon. And then, so I have this hamstring issue that I'm dealing with too. So,
yeah. So what's that all about?
I've had a hamstring issue for a while. Like even we're talking over a year ago that I was like seeing an orthopedic surgeon, I was doing PT and just nothing is helping. And they were like, you need to rest. I'm like, go pound salt. Okay. So I did though. I did take a lot of time off. Actually, I took off a decent amount of time last year before the half marathon when I probably should have been training, but I was like, I'm going to try to rest it. And I wasn't, like, it was just not, I rested, but not probably to what I should have. And then obviously I started doing the training leading up to Ironman, after Ironman, which the day after, I have to be honest and tell you, I felt really good.
Yeah,
the day after. That's awesome. Yeah. So I took some time off, obviously, probably to a month.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I was, I shocked myself. I mean, my legs were a little tired, but they were not, I was not sore. My back was sore. That was pretty much it, you know, I think from the bike stuff, but that was it. Nothing out of like ordinary. So I took probably like about a month off after Ironman before I really like got back into any sort of like running or anything like that. But I just love running. Like for me, that's just what I like to do. So I'm back with seeing this orthopedic surgeon. Yesterday, actually just got a PRP injection. Have you ever heard of that? Mm-hmm. So actually they took blood out of my arm and they took 15 cc's of blood out of my arm. They spin it down into like the good platelets.
Yeah.
And so 5 cc's of that, they inject that into your and right literally directly into my hamstring. So I had that procedure done yesterday. I have to rest and do absolutely no cardio for
2 weeks or
three. So, yeah. Meanwhile, I thought he told me I could do the bike, but I think I misunderstood him. So I can't do anything, but I know that's only going to help me in the long run. So like mentally, I think I can do it. You know, I can still do some weight stuff. Like this morning at home, I got up and I just did a little arm workout, you know, just mentally, I just need to be able to say that I can do something. Yeah. But, it set me back a little bit for my training because I'm like at around 12-ish miles right now. But, you know, I'm going to take probably a month off and I'm going to have to jump back into it. But I'm running the full because I have my sights on Boston.
Too. Yeah. Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I wanted to come back to that because I didn't know if it was so are you trying to qualify for Boston through Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the qualifying time for women?
So I've dug into this a lot. So here's the big deal is like, so I turned 40 this year, like you do. Right. And, so even though I'll be running it when I'm 39 this year, I'm hoping to qualify for Boston in 2024, in April of 2024. So I'll be 40 then. So you go off of that. So
I'm sorry. Yeah. So you're doing the Pittsburgh this year, but you're not trying to qualify this year.
So yes, I'm trying to use this race to qualify. But so Boston's always in April. So it's going to be in April of this year is Boston. But we don't run until May, right? So you can take this race and qualify for April of 2024. Oh, so it's basically almost a whole year. So the qualifying time to qualify, it's not to say you're necessarily even going to get in, but the qualifying time for age 40 is a 3:35.
Pittsburgh, that's going to be really tough.
Yeah. Yeah. So 3:54, I'm like, I got to shave 19 minutes off, which.
So you're shooting for a 3:35 this year in
Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Okay. You just gave me a new target.
See?
I got to.
See?
Well, just so I could like be with you and say, like, let's go.
You know what? Now I think about it. I might be wrong. That's what I'm shooting for. I'm sorry. 3:40 is the qualifying time for 40 years old. 35 to 39 is a 3:35 time. Yeah, so in my head, I'm thinking if I can get somewhere between a 3:35 and 3:40, which, that's fast. I got to get my act together. But this set me back a little bit, really, but I still, doable. It's doable.
I love it. So
we'll see.
Do you know Stephanie, who owns our diner here?
Oh, yes.
She's pretty fast.
Yeah, I know she is. She's like
in Boston.
Did she?
In Chicago. Yeah. She's been all over the place lately. I just saw her put up, she did like an 18-mile training run the other day.
Yeah.
And she's ridiculously fast.
She is fast.
Well, I think you two, You were pretty close to each other in one of our sweat bar runs. I think it was on the...
I'm sure she still blew past me. She's fast as hell.
No, I think you guys were relatively pretty close. Well, that's a shorter distance, so you would have been a little bit closer.
You know who else that I always like follow and I'll see at races is Ronnie's sister, Michelle Tarquinio.
Yeah, she's fast too. She comes to all of our sweat bar races.
Yeah,
too.
Right?
She's fast.
Yeah, she is. She's doing Boston. I think I saw her. I forget where, but she did get a qualifying time too. But it's like, oh man. In my eyes, I'm like, I want to do it in Pittsburgh and qualify, but if I don't, I still have a couple others that try to, we'll see. That's just a goal. I'd love to just like check it off a bucket list and say I ran in Boston.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's challenging for me because I have, my interests are in areas that don't all mesh really well. So like, I really want to do a lot of really great strength training and like beef up, but that doesn't really correlate well with running long distances. and I want to try to get faster running, but running faster does not really correlate with running longer distances.
I get it.
I'm like, do you want to run far or do you want to run fast? You need to kind of pick which one you want to do. So I actually think that my training by the Pittsburgh Marathon should be at a point where I should be able to run that distance at a round of four. I think trying to keep up with you at like a 3:35, I might lose my soul out there in Oakland again.
No, you could do it.
No way. There's no way. I literally, like, I remember climbing that hill my first time going, and I'm just thinking, man, like, this is brutal.
It is brutal. It's hard. Pittsburgh's hard.
Yeah. It was a tough one. I mean, so coming out of the transition of the bike, Jason Pompa was waiting for me.
Yeah.
Lake Placid. He was right there. He was trying to get into transition area. There was a guy literally collapsed on the ground in transition. I had to get medical support.
Oh, my gosh.
I was pretty close. I had never had my body like literally cramp up like that.
Yeah.
It felt like someone was squeezing me between like a huge wedge. Like,
oh my
I was
gosh.
Just getting, my body was getting squeezed, the cramping. So I just remember my brother-in-law saying, like, I can't wait to see you on the run because that's the thing that you do the most. And you're just going to take off on the run. I was 2 miles in and I'm like, this is like, he even said, he's like, this is the worst I've ever seen you look ever. And I'm thinking, gosh, I got like 5 more hours of this. 6 more hours.
Right.
I think my total bike time was like 7 hours or something like that. It was ridiculous.
That's okay. You finished.
Yeah.
That's
but
my
the
goal.
Salt, someone, it's so funny. I did a podcast about this a while back, but there was a guy that was racing in that race that saw me like in one of the groups on Facebook, one of the triathlete groups or whatever. And so he reaches out to me and he's just saying all this crazy shit. Like, I should be doing this and I should be doing that. And I have no idea what I'm in for. And I'm like, dude, leave me alone.
Yeah.
So turns out he flies by me on the bike and he's like, Shipley, Sweat Bar, what's up, man? And I'm like, who the hell is it? He's like, William Darcy here from Facebook. And I'm like, oh my God, this is the guy that's like driving me crazy. Turns out, nicest guy in the world. I thought, by the way, he was talking on Facebook, I thought he was like really fast because he looks like and I'm William, if you're listening to this, like, I think you're awesome. But he wasn't fast, and he even knew that. He thought I was gonna beat him. But anyway, I ran into him again on the run and I was in really bad shape.
Uh-huh.
And he had like sticks of salt.
Oh yeah.
And he was like, dude, you need salt really bad. And he was like, just shake it up, put it on your thumb, put it under your tongue. And like, that saved me. And
he
was just like the nicest guy to talk to. So it's like, don't judge a book by its
cover. Yeah, right.
Like the guy that was driving me not to end up becoming my saving grace.
That's so cool.
It's like your 70-year-old friend
that
ran the 5K with you.
So
you
crazy. Know, it's yeah, it's happens. Humbling. And they're all just super great people. Yeah. So great. They really are. It's
so is
so cool.
Boston out there or was this like the big reveal? Have you been telling people that you're going to Boston?
Just a couple. Yeah. There's only
That's
a few
awesome.
People.
That
yeah.
Is gonna, so if you get into yeah. Boston, it's going to be the crazy. I might drive there.
We'll see. We'll
see. I'm going to go to Boston to watch you.
Okay. Well, the whole thing is too, it's like you can qualify with a time, but then what's crazy about Boston is like you have to apply.
Yeah.
This year they did let everybody in. I want to say within the last 1 or 2 years, they've let everybody in. But, you know, obviously I don't know how to word this. Like, the lower you are below your cutoff time, the better chance you have of getting in.
Yeah.
But because obviously they have to cap it at some point. But I mean, I even got a Boston qualifying time and then, you know, go from there and see. But it's definitely, it's, on my horizon.
That's
for sure.
That's a fast time.
I mean, it is. I know.
Do you know what that minute per mile is?
No.
Do you haven't figured that out yet?
Well, I have it, like, but it's in the sevens.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah, it's easily in the sevens. Mm-hmm. We'll see. So I did the half marathon, like I was saying, in Cleveland, and I did a 1:45 there, which was my best, even though it was my hardest race that I've ran. So I figured it was like it's going to be pretty close to what I did there.
Well, in the Pittsburgh half last year, you ran.
I did a 1:48. Yeah, I was going to say but somewhere between 1:40, so 1:47 something maybe 1:48. Yeah, somewhere right in there. Yeah, which was my goal was under 1:50. So last year was under 1:50, yeah. And then I made it to 1:47 or 1:48. I forget what it was.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, and then I did not expect that in Cleveland, especially because of how far or how flat the course was. And I just wasn't feeling good that day. I just was not. I literally got in the car the night before after my kids got done trick or treating, went and stayed at an Airbnb, got up the next morning, ran the race in Cleveland, came home. I actually ended up in the hospital and like in the ER because I was having severe pains after I was done, but I drove home in such pain.
What was that from?
Here they think it was just like a stone that I just hadn't passed, you know, and then I eventually did, but it was horrible pains that I felt at the end of the race and then like all driving home and stuff. I mean, it was fine after, but I just wanted another race under my belt other than Pittsburgh. So that was the closest one I found and it was good. Yeah. But
it's good.
Yeah. Running's my thing, but I have to, you know, dabble into the other things and become a little bit more of a. Not a professional, but
it's really cool that you're getting into the Ironman world. Like that's
awesome. So neat. It's another world. Yeah. I mean, the amount of athletes, it's crazy. Yeah. Like you were saying, even Adam Wicks won, like follow him and talk to him here and there. And like, he's just an animal.
Yeah.
And you just see these people. And I think some of you even maybe mentioned this, like the people that you would look at and not even think that they are those types of athletes, and just crush these triathlons. You're like, where the hell did you come from? But it's
like, they're amazing.
Again, don't judge a book by its cover because, I mean, being a triathlete it's some serious shit.
Well, I think the really cool thing is that at the end of the day, it doesn't, and Dustin said this to me one time, he's like, I don't, like, these the people that are fun to watch are not the fast people.
Oh, I would agree with that.
They're the people that are like the people that are coming in at the very back, that you know just went through hell to get to that finish line. And it was funny because in North Carolina, it was actually in a college town, which the name of it's escaping me, but there was like a little street there, Main Street, that you ran through, but there was shops and restaurants and everything. And I don't know how we did it, but Sean and I actually, because there's so many people, but we actually got a table outside when I was done with the race. And so we were sitting there, we were having something to eat, you know, just having a beer. And do you do beers after races?
Oh, my gosh. They had one at the finish line for me. They did. Yeah. Yes, they did. Yeah.
So great. Doing a beer, actually, she's got a really cool picture from it. But I remember Dustin saying that, and I see, you know, all these people are still coming and they're finishing. And there was a lady there that was dressed like she wasn't literally dressed like a clown, but she had on all kind of clown colors.
Yeah.
And her hair was all crazy. And she had a megaphone. And she was a part of the Ironman event. She was, like, literally encouraging everyone to come in. And I just at one point I said to her, like, how close are we to like being the end? She's like, this is the last woman here.
Oh my gosh.
And I just remember seeing that woman like just come, you know, struggling down the road.
So crazy.
And these people are like in their 60s, 70s.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of them are battling, you know, like the loss of someone that they really loved or addiction. You know, they were addicted to something. A lot of them are battling like cancer, like bad prognoses. And you just never know, but they're out there and they're just really trying to live their life. And it's awesome to see, you know,
it's a mental game. Yeah. I don't care what anybody says. It's physical. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but you have to be mentally prepared for that.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, be able to talk to yourself and work
through
the things that are going through your head at that time. Because again, especially without music too, you have a lot of time to think out there.
Yeah.
And,
that's why I got into it.
So
3 or 4 years ago, I shouldn't say I didn't like the person who I was. I felt like I was someone that backed away from things that were challenging.
Okay.
In some areas of life.
Yeah.
Like work-wise, I was good.
Yeah.
I took on big challenges. In other areas, I just felt like I was someone that kind of wanted to be comforted and coddled and like protected. And I didn't like that. Like, I was like, why am I so afraid of, like, just discomfort? And
yeah.
I signed up for that Spartan sprint. It was only 4 miles. So I had to run like 4 miles. Here I'm thinking I'm going to train and win this thing, which that's a whole other story in and of itself. But I just training, like running a mile or two, I just wanted to stop each time and quit and go. And I'm like, why are you like this? Why are you like, just stop wanting to quit and go back home. And I was sick of, you know, I quit almost every sport in high school. So I was like, I stopped quitting everything. Like,
right.
Just, you know, and that just led to 2 miles and 3 miles and 4 miles.
Yeah.
And then, but that was the game for me, was trying to figure out the mental. So real quick, because we were talking about how fast people are, I just want to leave the listeners with this.
Yeah.
So I was just reading about this the other day. The 100-mile record.
Okay.
Is at a, I think it's right around a 6:42.
Okay.
Per mile pace.
Oh my God.
For 100 miles straight. Oh my God.
That is asinine. That is crazy. So what does that mean a finish time of? Like, I can't do the math.
11 hours.
Okay, that's what I'm going to actually say.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the first guy that did it, I forget his name, but he was American. He didn't do it, but he broke the world record. And then he actually didn't stop at 100 miles. He ended up running like 104 or 5 because he wanted to get his 12-hour record. He wanted to get the most miles he's ever ran in 12 hours.
Okay.
So he broke it in under 12, but then someone from another country beat him. And it's some ridiculously stupid. So I don't think I can run 3 miles at that pace.
Oh, God, yeah.
Let alone 100.
Correct.
So
that's like not human.
Some people are, you know, have gifts. They still work hard.
But yeah.
They're gifted a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But your pace, that's your pace that you're
going to
do the marathon. That makes me kind of go, oh my God.
You can do it. You can do it. You can.
You can. Do it. I'm going to go for like somewhere in the eights. We'll try that. Maybe.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, I tell everyone, like, hey, someone's 100 milers is someone else's 5K. Doesn't matter. Just get out there and go for it.
I mean, unless you want to qualify or, you know, for your personal best or whatever, otherwise it's just, you know, and I like to say it for people that have never done a race like that. I'm like, just get out there and do it.
Yeah.
Nobody cares how fast you're doing.
No.
We're all running the same distance.
Right.
If you've never done it, like, don't set a goal in terms of a finish time. Set a goal to finish because you may never do it again, you know, but guess what? If you do it once, I can guarantee you're going to do it again and you're going to try to beat that goal. And now you have something, you have a benchmark, you know, and that's my biggest thing I always try to tell people is like, who cares? Your first race, just do it.
Yeah.
Just get out and do it, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, if that's all you need is the distance, do it. But otherwise, if you have a time, then if you put your mind to it,
go for it.
You can do it.
Well,
yeah.
I tell people to start with a distance, start with completing.
Yeah,
and then,
for sure.
And then as you build like to the next challenge, then it's, you know, start thinking about times or going further or whatever, however you want to challenge yourself. But
agree.
You're awesome. You're out there inspiring lots of people, including
thanks,
myself.
Chad.
So,
hey,
you.
I only signed up because of your crazy ass. So
I signed up because of Dustin, so we'll blame
him. Okay, that sounds
good. We never
good.
Came back to that story, but the closing point was that I took off like a bat out of hell just to be an asshole. And I knew at some point that you two would be passing me.
Oh gosh, yeah, that's what.
And you didn't even, you guys didn't even know each other, and you're.
We didn't.
And then
we
you
did
both
it.
Passed me at the exact same time, but then I kind of stayed with you.
You did. You did.
And it was cool because at that point we were all kind of like planning for Ironmans.
Yeah,
and,
we were.
I just kept thinking like, this is the Ironman crew. We're in it. We're doing it.
And I was like, what did I get myself into? But it was good. That was a great race. So
you guys blew me away at the end. I'm like, all right, I'm like right behind him. And then we climbed that last hill and you were both gone. I'm like, what the hell? How do they do it? I'm so mad.
It was my birthday. I was motivated. I don't know. Yeah.
You're awesome. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for
Let's
having me, Chad.
Again.
Yeah,
we're
absolutely.
We're going to do it after the Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay, I'm in.
After
that works.
Qualify.
Let's hope. Fingers crossed. Yeah. Thanks,
cool.
Chad. Alrighty.
Nice. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
Stop this thing.
Big thanks to you for listening. If you enjoyed, please share with a friend. That's the only way this thing will grow, and you'll be helping me in the biggest way possible. Please also make sure to check out the Friday Fire newsletter and my Light Your Fire Motivation and Mindset podcast via the link in the show notes.